The Babylon Podcast was our last best hope for B5 fans. A self-contained show, 1 hour long, located on an RSS feed. A place for interviews and episode discussions for a whole bunch of humans and aliens. A shining beacon in cyberspace, all alone on the web. It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, the year the Lost Tales came upon us all. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2007. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to the Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And I'm Tim Adamick.
And I'm just me. I just gotta be me.
As long as you don't start singing, we can handle that.
I'm too tired to sing.
Good. We are once again Jeffrey-less.
We weep. There's much wailing and gnashing of teeth. So yeah, we have no idea whether it's the TV gods have got him or he finally said, what the hell am I doing with these losers? And
I'm just hoping he didn't somehow manage to catch what I had, because that was evil.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah, that would be no fun.
But we'll hear from him soon enough.
Yeah.
But you have some news for us, you were saying?
Yeah, I got a couple things to share here. Sort of interrelated. Number one is I got an email, and so I posted this up on the website. Claudia Christian's memoir has been published. It is called My Life with Geeks and Freaks.
Mm-hmm.
You can either go to Claudia's official webpage and mm-hmm. buy an autographed copy for like $32 or something like that, or you can go to the Yard Dog Press website and order an unsigned copy for like $12.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is right. Our old friend, Selena Rosen, from Yard Dog
No
Press,
way.
Published Claudia's book.
Yeah. And let me say this. Without knowing what the content is like or anything, this is no knock on the book itself, but whoever designed the cover, they used the old Star Trek font for that.
No. Okay, yes. Hang on a second.
Wow.
Now, obviously somebody did not do their homework. And, you know, I mean, speaking as a graphic designer, you gotta get these things right. Because especially when you're dealing with freaks and geeks and they know this stuff.
That's true.
Yeah.
They will call you on it, that's for
sure. Oh, yeah. They will send flaming arrows of doom at you for this kind of stuff.
You know what it is.
You know, this is not just your general consternation, oh, I can't believe they did this thing. This is... You have committed evil heresies and must now die.
It's a clever ploy, though, to drive up the price. Because what's going to happen is everybody's going to buy one of these. They're going to complain about it. And then they'll release a new copy with a brand new font, and these will become collector's items.
You're right. This is original series font. I can't believe they did that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. So and Claudia is looking very saucy, especially on the back cover photo there.
Oh, well.
Anyways, so that's out there. Now, the other part of the news that I had to share is this was, you know, following some links in the JMS B5 News Digest, a handful of pieces here. So somebody had written to the news group this. It was written in the Claudia Christian email newsletter. Quote, for those of you who are interested in the Babylon 5 novel, it will not be published. JMS squashed the release of the book, and that's all I know. Then there's a response from JMS, which says, nobody went out of their way to squash, squish, or smush Claudia's book. None of the Mongoose B5 novels are going ahead, hers or anybody else's. There's nothing more to it than that. And then on, I think it's the Mongoose discussion forum, from Matt Sprang. Hi, guys. We have agreed to drop the entire novel's project. It really wasn't going to go anywhere. In their place, we have a new B5-related project waiting in the wings. More news on this soon. I obviously cannot say much about this, meaning the novels, but all parties involved decided it would be better if the novels were put behind us to focus on other projects. So take from that what you will, but the novels that... I wonder if Julie Caitlin Brown's novel is one of those that's no longer in the offing as well.
Hmm.
So there you have it, folks. That's the current state of the Mongoose B5 novel tie-ins. I just find some of the wording interesting on it, that's all. So
basically the memoirs are fine, the fiction set in the B5 universe is not. That's the official story, so...
Right. And it's not Claudius specifically, it's all of that, generally.
Huh.
So...
Yep. On the next topic, Babylon podcast swag.
Yes.
I am still trying to find out if we can use some sort of Drazi-ish logo as a patch on the football jerseys. They will be purple and they will be green. Not purple and green. Purple. You'll have one that's purple and white, one that's green and white, so we can have people running around cons yelling purple, green, smash.
Yes. Now, but here's the other part of it, people.
Yes.
If we're going to do this, we're going to go all the way.
Yes.
So if and when it finally comes to fruition, when you order your purple, green jersey, you get whatever color comes to you.
Oh, really?
Because... Well, I think so.
Yeah.
You reach into a barrel.
Yeah.
He who pulls out green is green. He who pulls out purple is purple.
I think green people should be able to choose purple or green.
You know what? I know that you, in purple you're stunning summer.
Well, no.
But if you're going to do the Drazi, you've got to do the Drazi.
Okay, then. If people are going to be randomly selected, I think... We should have like an underground black market where people can trade.
Well, that's entirely between you and the other guys in purple and green.
Oh, God, you guys just set up an entire eBay trade.
No kidding.
No, seriously. I think people should be able to select purple or green themselves because that's just...
All right.
I know it's anti-Drazi. But, you know, the shadows have had an influence here. We are taking it to another level. We are going to have one jersey for purple leader and one jersey for green leader. And you are going to be green leader, and I am going to be purple leader. That's how far we're going.
But here's the thing, though. If everybody orders purple jerseys, I'm meat.
No, you're not, because a whole lot of people want green. Have you? You've never been in the chat room when this is going on. Green right now is outnumbering purple.
Okay, well, good.
So my people are going to have to fight Sneaky.
that is, of course, if your people are around long enough to be able to fight Sneaky.
Oh, no. I think my people will arrange to have your people herded into the airlock unwittingly.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
man.
So yes, while there will be a green leader and a purple leader, and I am purple leader because in purple I am stunning. I want P. Dilly to keep numbers on how many purples have been sold, how many greens have been sold. That would just be funny.
Yes.
And we might have to do something like what he's done with what J.C. Hutchins has done with Seven Son. You can't have a duplicate number in a team.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
So if somebody has, like, number 12 on purple, nobody else can get 12.
12, right.
You know, but they can get it in green. So that would have to be the dilemma. Do they want green or do they want 12? You know, if they want purple and the 12 is gone, they can't have it. They have to make a choice.
There you go. Now, here's the question. Uh-huh. Do we retire 42? In honor of Jackie Robinson, was there ever a Drazi Jackie Robinson?
No, this is football, so it would have to be a Jim Brown.
Oh, I thought we were going to do baseball.
No, we're doing football. You want baseball? Well, I don't know.
I want baseball. That's because that's the sport of choice on Babylon 5.
This is true. I will see I don't know if he can do baseball jerseys. I will ask.
Okay. We'll find out.
But I think
if we can do baseball jerseys, I want a baseball jersey.
I think we're doing football, though, because that's what he already has a...
All right. We've got to find out. We've got to hash this out some more.
Well, you could accessorize and get purple and green bats and, you know, just have all kinds of fun.
Wow.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Now, if you have a purple bat and a green jersey,
You have to beat yourself.
I was thinking more along the lines of somebody walking through a con with a purple bat with some green I-cord dripping off the end of it.
Yes, the imagination runs rampant.
It does, it does. So if we do football, we'd have to retire either...
Well, I think you have to retire 42 because that is the answer.
42 is the answer. This is true.
Yes.
We'll have to figure out the numbering.
You probably also have to retire 1, 2, 3, and 4 because those were all destroyed or disappeared.
Oh.
No. I looked in my closet about 4 years ago, and I found a jersey in there, so it was the number 4.
Okay, the puns have taken over. Get us out of here. We will be back after this short break and dive right in to Deep Geeking.
The Scapecast has started its second season, and after winning the highest honor a fan podcast can receive, the Parsec Award, what did the crew of the Scapecast do?
Kevin and Lindy on codeine, so watch out.
Well, apparently, they went insane.
Attention.
Don't bother, they're here.
Stop.
That's a new one for me.
Howdy, howdy.
Ah, fellas.
Hey, Ema, what you doing?
Sword fighting.
Woohoo.
Crack.
Cuckoo.
Daft. Demented.
How long can that woman talk?
But then again, look what their show's about.
So much to say.
What the frill are you?
It's sweeter than a sweet thing.
I've got a plan.
You made me drink beef.
Women. I want to be blonde again.
She wants to watch.
Oh, no.
Girl power.
And yet, such little capacity.
Bite me.
Wile E. Coyote would come up with a better plan than that.
Sex, she gives me a Woody.
Would you quit speaking English?
The Scapecast is your guide to the wonders of Farscape. You can find the Scapecast at scapecast.org.
This is a show that never ends, never ends, and it goes on and on, my friend.
Digging down to the obscurest facts in fandom. This is Deep Geeking.
And we have returned with the second most favorite segment of the show, Deep Geeking.
Yep. Your second favorite thing in the universe, Summer?
No. The second favorite thing for our listeners.
Yeah,
this is the second favorite segment of theirs. I think voicemail is first. Either that or just listening to Yarsto and Edmund's voicemails is first.
I know I enjoy listening to that.
Everybody does. Everybody does. Today, we are talking about another revelatory episode, Knives.
Yes, in which we have really two parallel stories. One involves some strange goings-on with Captain John Sheridan, and the other involves some strange goings-on with Lana Mollari, although in two different ways. Now, let me just share sort of an overall thought I got from watching this.
Okay.
And it kind of speaks to a bigger thought, if you will. The concept of A story and B story. In Knives, it seems set up that the quote-unquote A story is John Sheridan experiencing strange things happening to him after encountering a dead Markab and down below. But really, the more compelling story is Londo's reunion with his friend Urza Jado. So which one do you want to tackle first?
I actually consider the Centauri storyline the A-line.
I would too, except, well, you know what I think it is? Mm-hmm. I think, if I recall correctly, the previews for next week's episode, next on Babylon 5, was all about John Sheridan's cohabitation with the alien entity. And
giving a hitchhiker a ride.
Yeah, that's right.
But no, if you watch the teaser, the teaser's cliffhanger ends with, you know, Londo in apparent peril.
Yes.
So that to me indicates that's the primary storyline, because that's the one that hooks you in. You know, Sheridan walking off to say, hey, I'm going to go wander around, in Gray Sector by myself, not so much of a cliffhanger. Londo right. being put in a half Nelson by, a chokehold by somebody and go saying, you're going to die, and Londo looking like he's in fear for his life right when it fades to black and goes to the intro, that's a hook. That's a cliffhanger. Yep. So that to me says that's the primary story.
Okay.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
and that part of the episode, that story in the episode, really is prime stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that, well, really the main thrust is Londo coming face to face on a much more personal level with the price of the choices he has made.
Mm-hmm.
As you recounted, Summer, the teaser ends with Londo in a chokehold, and it turns out he's being been ambushed by an old dueling buddy and best of friends since childhood, and House Jaddo and House Mollari had been allied since before the beginning, almost, it seems, the earliest days of the Republic. So, feelings run deep between Urza and Londo. But as it turns out, Urza is on the verge of being discredited and disgraced in public, and I guess legally almost. They accuse him of treason. And they're going to, in the Centaurum, pass a resolution basically stripping him of all power and dishonoring him. And Urza comes to his friend Londo, tells him that his star is on the rise back on Homeworld. And he knows that if his friend Londo stands with him, then House Jaddo will stand as well. And those who are spreading vicious, untrue rumors will have to back down. But unfortunately, when Londo goes to pull favors with his friend Reefa, Reefa's kind of aghast that Londo is, knows this person. He's like, have you told anybody about this? Did you know this guy?
Yes.
Londo says, well, not yet. And Reefa's like, well, don't do it. You're gonna be committing political suicide. And what did he say? He says, if you insist on standing with Jaddo, you may not fit in with our plan.
Mm-hmm. And then Londo's explosion. Your plans wouldn't exist if it wasn't for me and my plans.
That's right. And at that point, it's Reefa's turn to look uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll see what I can do. Yeah. And as we find out subsequently, Urza, who's throwing a banquet for a number of other Centauri notables, as a place for them to see he and Londo together, when they get to talking, it turns out that it's Reefa who's actually engineering the whole thing, plotting the whole thing against Urza.
Mm-hmm.
And when he finds out that Londo is in league with Reefa for other things, they're friends, as Londo says.
Yes, they're new friends.
Yes, Urza explodes and challenges Mollari to a duel.
Mm-hmm.
Although I suspect, as the episode plays out, I kind of think that Urza knew where Londo was the whole time.
I think he had to have, because
yeah.
if he truly knew as much as he said he knew. There's no way he could not have known that Londo was allied with Reefa. I mean, he probably knew that because Londo was so far away, he had nothing to do with Reefa's machinations, but he knew that Londo was part of the that group's rise and ascendance. And maybe he saw, you know, said, well, Londo's my friend. He can help me out of this. So he went there intending to go through with this duel from the start. It wasn't something that he was pushed into at the last minute because of what he found out about Londo during the banquet. He knew that going in. He had to have. It could not have been a surprise.
I agree. And I think that's foreshadowed just a bit by his ambush of Londo in the hallway at the teaser.
Huh, yeah.
You know, even though it was, you know, written off as a friendly, you know, one of those things that close buddies do.
Yeah, a little prank.
Friend. Yeah, right, prank. There you go, right. There is just an edge to it. And, of course, they have the duel. And though Urza seems to get the upper hand on Londo, when he goes to apparently deliver the coup de grace, or the final blow, he leaves himself open so that Londo can thrust and kill Urza.
Mm-hmm.
And that last bit when Urza's dying in Londo's arms is just really poignant. I love Peter Jurasik's expression as he's holding, you know, his dying, Londo's dying friend. It's moving. It really
yeah.
is. And of course, Veer is beside himself. He has no idea what's going on and why Urza would do such a thing. And then afterwards, you know, when Veer's saying, well, at least you weren't killed, you know, Londo's like, no, you don't understand.
Yeah, his being
killed. I could
killed,
never beat him when we were kids.
Yeah.
And he could have killed me at any time, yeah.
Yeah, he knew. He's like, I didn't win that. He let me win. Because his killing me would not have saved his family. This way I can protect them, which is what he wanted the entire time.
Yeah, and ironically, he knew that his good and dear friend Malari would honor that.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever else has changed that alters the relationship between those two individuals, he knows that Malari holds Centauri honor highly.
Yes.
And Malari was, you know, Lana's surprised to learn that Malachi was murdered.
Yes.
So, you know, that gives him pause. And you really get a even better sense of all the machinations that are going on in the Centauri with just the one line where Londo tells Veer, get in touch with my contacts back home. It's about time I spend more time paying attention to what's happening on Homeworld. So it's like all these nobles have this network of spies and spies within spies.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
it's very much like the ancient Victorian, you know, noble, the houses of nobles where you don't know, you really don't know who in your house is a spy for somebody else. And
knowing that you've got your own spies in somebody else's house as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all a whole part of the game. I like Delondo's line as he's getting ready for the duel. And Veer says to him, don't do this. This is madness. It's like, these are mad times. You must learn to embrace it.
Strength.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the one connection, I don't know if it was officially made or not, but wasn't the two young children who were playing in the throne room when Londo was sitting on the throne in, was it in the beginning? Didn't the little boy say his last name was Jado?
You know, I don't recall, and I've you know what? I've got the novelization, but it's not in easy reach, so I'll have to check that, and we will Somebody in the chat room there, I'm sure, probably knows as well. That I don't know that it's made explicit, and I don't recall that. You know what? I won't even hazard a guess.
We will check our sources and get back to you. But I'm pretty sure the little boy said his name was, you know, something Jado, and I was like, hey, cool.
Yeah, well, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, if there's you know, any one thing that we know about JMS and how he handles the Babylon 5 universe, it is those little things that get dropped in and out.
He has an affinity for the threads interweaving with each other many, many times over, giving us a finely woven Egyptian cloth of 200-count silk.
And which is an excellent segue, Summer, because the other story, it pulls on some threads from first year with Babylon Squared, and we're dealing with Sector 14, where Babylon 4 disappeared. And we also get a little reference for an episode that's upcoming. And I'll get to that reference. With Sheridan's story, we start off where he is taking batting practice.
Mm-hmm.
And Garibaldi comes up and they have a chat about, you know, how the day has been. And, well, you didn't have to spend your time down in the triangle. And Sheridan says, what's that? It's like, well, you know, it's this creepy place and down below and a lot of superstition. And Sheridan says, I loved that kind of stuff when I was a kid. I'm going to go down there and check it out by myself. And much to Garibaldi's consternation. So Sheridan's, you know, mucking around down there. And those were kind of nice scenes, very atmospheric. Hears a banging and finds a Markab lying on the deck, bleeding from his head. He seems to be dead. And then when Sheridan tries to get in touch with Garibaldi, the dead Markab reanimates and clutches at Sheridan's own head. There's some sort of weird transference of energy. And then the Markab falls dead again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unless you've been hidden away on an abandoned mining colony on some distant world, you pretty much know that when somebody grabs somebody else's head and there's a transfer of energy, that there's some alien thing that's been moving from person to person. So there's really no, you know, there's no big surprise here about what this story is going to be. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when they get back to Med Lab, and Doc Franklin checks him out and says, you're okay. And then we get the point of view from Sheridan. He's having an acid flashback. Yeah.
Acid.
You know, yeah, you think there might be something wrong. That is one of the biggest problem I have with this particular part of the episode is that it's not as bad as the rubber monsters we get in Infection or Gray 17 is Missing, but it's pretty much in the same vein. You know, I mean, it's like we in the audience who know the idiom of science fiction or science fiction television anyways, pretty much know what's going on, okay? So mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot of mystery there. What makes it tolerable, shall we say. There's a handful of things. The scene in Med Lab where they're examining the dead Markab, I thought that had some nice light touches. When they're, you know, Sheridan says, well, do we know who he is? And Garibaldi pulls out his scanner and says, yeah, he's and Franklin takes it and pronounces it perfectly. I thought that was kind of nice. When they're trying to come up for a reason as to why a dead Markab might grab Sheridan, and Franklin says, well, you know, there's things that happen post-mortem and could have been gas, and Garibaldi's great, as Avi Markab with gas. You know, those were kind of nice touches. And the Grylor, as dopey as the scene was a pretty cool effect.
But he shot that defenseless piece of table art for no good reason.
Yeah. you know, whatever.
I thought it was very interesting that he was able to put together the metaphors. I don't know if that was a nod to the, what was it, the Next Generation episode where Picard had to speak in all metaphors with that one race, or you know the one I'm talking about.
I know the one you're talking about.
But he was able to put the messages together, and just happened to connect it to the picture of Babylon 4 disappearing again, and go, okay.
Yeah, and then he just, you know, sneaks out. I thought that was pretty good. But I also liked that, you know, once Garibaldi was chasing after him, he didn't feel particularly upset about that. You know what I'm saying? It was like, it wasn't like, go back, this is something I have to do alone. It was like, okay, well, you're out here. You know, what are you doing out here, Captain? Well, I think I'm giving somebody a ride home. And, you know, and that was okay.
Yeah.
And I did kind of like the thing when it exits Sheridan's body, that it's not this clean thing. It's a, looks like a fairly painful process to have this thing coming out of all your orifices.
Yeah. I think I see it as a good way to introduce Sheridan to what really happened with Babylon 4. I'm just not sure I like the way it was done.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Sector 14 thing ultimately seems irrelevant. You know, in terms of the Babylon 5 mythology, Sector 14 is a really big deal with initial capitals because of what happens with Babylon 4. And, of course, as we find out later on with War Without End and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, on the one hand, I mean, is it that they had this alien, this is kind of the, you know, the filler plot, if you will. We need to do something with it. Well, where would it come from? We need some kind of weird spatial anomaly. Well, we've already got one set up. Let's not bother
picking
up a secondary one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there was some setup going along here. I noticed in the second season episode guide mm-hmm. that I have by Jane Killick, Knives comes before In the Shadow of Zahadum.
So, in production, yeah. It's mentioned in the Lurker's Guide, too, but there was so much CG for Knives,
mm-hmm.
It had to get flipped.
Yeah, that's what made me go look it up, because I was like, notice, I'm like, wait a minute, Knives, then In the Shadow of Zahadum, then Confessions and Lamentations, and that's the other connection. How there's a setup. You have you see the Marcap. I don't think they've actually ever been mentioned by name before.
No, I don't think so either. And there's Dr. Franklin, who also
mentions
says,
his good friend. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a Marcap doctor who's a good friend. I'll talk to him about it.
Mm-hmm. So that's leading into Confessions and Lamentations. You've got the Sheridan seeing what happened to the Icarus was supposed to lead into his confrontation with Morden. So that, you know, seeing those threads be set up to be paid off almost immediately would have been cool. But it kind of works this way.
Yeah, it's because it's not such a big deal in the end. And I think that's, you know, if you had to sit in Straczynski's office, that's probably what he was looking at as well. It's like, well, you know what, this is, you know, not critical to the story that I'm telling in terms of, you know, this happens and this happens. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, when he's in med lab, Sheridan says, thought I saw the Icarus, my wife's ship. It blew up 2 years ago. You know, you would have known that last week,
mm-hmm.
if you will. But, you know, that's minor. I don't have a quibble with that. That's, you know, that's the exigencies of producing a television series, so you know, that's not as egregious as some of the things that TNT did with the Order on Crusade. Let's you know, we'll put it in perspective that way. The other thing that I found interesting, and this is just because of me and because that's how I am, Sheridan taking batting practices using a wooden bat, and Garibaldi picks up an aluminum one.
Interesting. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I do because, you know, I'm a baseball fan. I notice that kind of stuff.
I'm a baseball fan, too, but I didn't notice it. But now that I think about it, I can hear, I can hear the ting.
Right. So that leads me to wonder, you know, is it the kind of thing that, you know, still in the major leagues that they still only use wood, or is aluminum accepted as well? Or, and then the other thing I started thinking about is at that point in the future, I can imagine baseballs with embedded sensors inside that, and then the field basically crisscrossed with a sensor grid. As you recall, as they're taking batting practice and Sheridan and Garibaldi are talking, there's the robot umpire, fair ball, home run, foul ball. So at that point, you don't need, I guess you need umpires for, you know, calling outs and, you know, close throws at the plate, but balls and strikes, hey, you'll never get those wrong. That's how much I enjoyed that part of the episode. Let's put it to you that way. And I sat there watching it again, thinking about how baseball would evolve in 2259 as opposed to something living inside Sheridan's brain. So, and well, I'll also give you this. It does set up, in terms of the Babylon 5 universe, the possibility, as we see later on, with Kosh inside of Sheridan's head. It does establish a precedent that way.
Hmm.
But, you know.
So does this mean the captain of Babylon 5 is going to be subjected to random invasions of his brain?
Well, let's see. It's either that or he has to immediately accept a new post on a distant world. Take your choice. What do you want, Captain? Removal from the station and sent to Minbar, or something inside your head? You know, I'll take something inside my head. Thank you very much. No, I'm just saying, in terms of like as in the same vein that you're saying, setting up Sheridan's introduction to the Babylon 4 mystery, this kind of sets the groundwork for, you know, having a Vore line in your head. That's all I'm saying. So.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's you know, take it for what it's worth. Really, I think we both agreed that the Centauri portion of the episode is the strongest part, and the bit with the life form is, you know, take it or leave it. I mean, at that point, you know, unlike a lot of other episodes where they have these two disparate stories, there's nothing that ever brings them together. So at that point, you know, this creature thing could have been interchanged with any other kind of story. So, all right, there. I'm done.
Are you done now?
Yeah.
Well, we covered everything then, huh?
Yeah, you know, we didn't talk about the Centauri Opera.
That was priceless.
That really was.
The singing, you saw them arguing semantics over who's a better singer, who's a better performer, who performed the opera better, and then you see them singing the parts back and forth. It's actually a bonding moment between them, and they're like, yeah. You get that little, oh yeah, okay, you're right there. It's just amusing.
Right. They grasp hands, they sing together. I liked how the score picks up their tune to make a, you know, sort of a unified whole. That's really, I mean, it was a very, very sweet scene.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. Yeah. Good stuff. Oh, the other part that I did like, one last little mention, Hondo keeps his very good breviary in a locked safe. I don't think that was just a cabinet. I got the sense that was a safe.
Double deadbolt.
Right. It's very good breviary.
Did it have the exploding dye pack in there?
Right, exactly.
And the little motion activated lasers to slice off any fingers that reach in there.
Right, precisely.
Okay, now we're getting out of there. All right.
I think that's about it.
We are done. We are done with the deep geeking for the episode Knives. And we'll be right back with our next favorite segment, listener feedback.
Wendell, I've been hunting all night. You've just been hanging around. Have you done anything tonight? Oh, I've been reading this comic. It's really good.
Oh, yeah?
Where did you find that?
I used Comics Radar.
You used echolocation to find comics?
Not my radar. Comics Radar at comicsradar.com. It's a comics podcast that gives news, reviews, and interviews so I can find the best new comics out there. I just download them onto my flypod and listen as I go.
A flypod? Don't you need your ears to hunt bugs?
Me? Go hunting? Man, haven't you ever heard of takeout?
Comics Radar, taking a closer look at comics below the radar. Find it at comicsradar.com or search in iTunes for Comics Radar.
And we're back with voicemail.
Hell yes.
Listener feedback. That segment of the show that people look forward to almost as much as the deep geeking, and some people even more, because we know Yarstow's favorite segment, I think, is the deep geeking because it gives him a reason to dominate the voicemail. That's my theory.
And I think
you're sticking to it.
Yeah. Yes. So Edmund's favorite would be the first and the last because it gives him a reason to dominate the voicemail.
Yes, Edmund's favorite is the open because it gives him chance to add commentary or pick nits, and the voicemail because it gives him a chance to respond to Yarstow's comments and even sometimes his own.
Well, now, here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
Yarstow has his own special bumper
for
his voicemail.
Yes, he does.
Edmund doesn't yet.
No, we need to
And
fix that.
I think Edmund needs to have his own.
Yes, he does.
He really, really
yet
does.
Yet being the operative term there. Yes,
Yeah, so whoever did those wonderful Babcom things, you need to get on the recorder again and
do
something there.
Would Edmund's be like from the Clark administration or from...
You know
what? He wouldn't be a Narn. He wouldn't be. Who would?
No,
would
he wouldn't. No, you're right. And because I screen these things, I know one of his voicemails, and I think the Clark administration might just be perfect. But
so we could go with a gold channel.
Something from Earth Dome. Gold channel.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Let's. In that case, I see Edmund's first up. Let's play it.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi guys, it's Edmund from Greenville. Very nice geeking on In the Shadow of Zahadoom. I've always loved the build-up of pressure on Sheridan as everyone tries to intervene, from Garibaldi to Veer to Ivanova to Franklin to finally Delenn and Kosh. A pressure very satisfyingly released with some juicy revelations, only to have the ante upped considerably. Watching this time, I realized that Talia's description of her encounter with Morden...
Like falling into a bottomless well. And cold. So cold.
Foreshadows Sheridan's fate, so famously voiced by Kosh at the end of the episode. I also marvel at JMS' ability to put spoilers into his own scripts and make them work. Finally, I just wanted to put in my vote for Babylon Podcast swag. I'd proudly sport Tim's logo. Polo shirts, mouse pads, purple and green jerseys all work for me, although my vote is for baseball jerseys. It's the only sport consistently mentioned, plus I just watched Knives with the batting cage scenes. If it works for Garibaldi, that's good enough for me. Be seeing you.
Yeah. I actually would love to have one of those jerseys that Garibaldi have.
Yeah. Yeah, those are pretty sharp looking.
And come to think of it, I don't own any football jerseys. I have a number 42 University of Maryland baseball jersey, varsity, red, thank you very much. I have a St. Louis Cardinals, home white, Ozzie Smith. Gotta
oh,
love
boy,
it.
There you go, yeah.
And New York Mets, home black, Piazza.
Hmm. Ooh.
And then I have a old school Rangers jersey, hockey Rangers, road blue, Mike gotcha. Gartner. How many people know who he is?
You know, the name rings a bell, but I'm not as big a hockey fan. yeah. Hmm.
So we may have
You know what? I don't own any official jerseys. I've got an Orioles t-shirt, but that's about it.
I had an Orioles jersey once, a long time ago. I think a dog ate it or something. But, yeah, I think we may have to go baseball. Now, the more that I think about it, we may have to go baseball.
Yeah, I think so. All right, next voicemail.
Babcom link to Earth Force Destroyer Netherlands established. Incoming message from Captain Yarstow.
This is Yarstow from the Netherlands responding to episode 64. I just have one rather worrying observation to make. I actually have the beginning of an idea for how a separate B5 podcast featuring Edmund, myself, and possibly Tim A. might work. I even have a potential title. And yes, Summer, the domain name is still available.
Oh, dear God, no.
Yep, and you know what? That's all he says.
Wait a minute.
I'm frightened. This wasn't like a plan. This was like the evil villain going mwah, ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
And then disappearing into the shadows.
No,
what
Mr.
did he
Bond.
Just do? Was that a hit and run?
I think it was.
Yeah.
It was a drive by.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do we want to know what he's planning?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. If we capture him, we're going to have to let him go because Yarstow is never alone. Because Summer, eventually you'll get him to say what he's up to, and then he'll be killed, and you'll be killed, and all of Farpoint Media will be killed.
Oh, my goodness. Yarstow, see what you've started.
Yarstow must be released.
Yumpin' yeminis.
All right.
Okay. Well,
play the next one while I ask Yarstow what the hell he was talking about.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi, guys. It's Edmund from Greenville. I thoroughly enjoyed the interview with Tim Earls last week. It was great to hear him mention Stingray and Thunderbirds, which I also grew up watching, along with the other Gary Anderson creations like Captain Scarlet and the oft-overlooked UFO. As a fellow lapsed architect who doodled spaceships in my school books, it was great to hear from someone who gets to make their daydreams realities. But the British series I really wanted to call about was The Prisoner. Many fans know that Bester's customary sign-off and the one I usually use for these voicemails was a nod to The Prisoner. But there is another common element that I've hardly ever seen mentioned. The opening credit to The Prisoner contains this exchange.
What do you want? Information.
Followed a bit later by this one.
Who are you? The new number two.
It's more of a cosmic coincidence than an homage. After all, these are common questions. But still, it provides an intriguing congruence between two of my favorite TV series. And for the Prisoner fans out there, yes, I did use the Leo McKern opening. You will always be the number one, number two. Be seeing you.
Hmm. Who is number one?
You are number six.
Yes. Now, how many people remember that he was the priest from Lady Hawk?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Okay, my brain just officially
nice.
Scared me now. Dude.
Summer gets five geek points.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got nothing. I got nothing.
The prisoner was quite a piece of television. There's no doubt about that.
Is that available on DVD?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I had the whole series. Charlie brought them over for us.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, it's very uneven, but it's one of those things that when it's on, it is mind-breakingly on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for Charlie's DVDs, I still have them.
Oh, you do?
So if he misses them, I got them. They're me. That's on me.
Well, you just lost plausible deniability.
No, because I still have my...
But you got lemony freshness back.
I actually still have Mike's copy of Sin City, which I've had for how long now?
Oh, you have it? Actually, you can keep it. I got another copy.
No way.
It's yours.
Oh, my God. I feel so bad. I'm sorry. Oh, man. Now I feel like a heel. Do we have any emails?
Yeah, we got a couple emails here. Oh, and by the way, that last voicemail from Edmund, that was kind of slipped between the cracks, and so I wanted to get that out there. Here's one from Tracy Herrick. And Tracy says, green and purple jerseys, heck yes. Do we get to, that wasn't a good Napoleon Dynamite, sorry. Heck yes. Do we get to brawl if we see someone on the other team? I'm so green. Speaking of which, a fun little game to play when watching the show with people is to see who is the first to call out Green Drazi whenever Kim Strass shows up on the screen in whatever alien form. So, Tracy finds amusement wherever. Okay, so, but we got another vote for, and there's a green one. Okay, never mind then. So again, more votes for jerseys. Here's one from Matt in Michigan. Tim Jeffrey, Summer, Tim A., Mike Yarstow, Edmund, and everyone else that pops up on the show. All right, that was not fair. Here I was trying to do my afternoon workout when the Yarstow Babylon Comedy Hour comes on my MP3 player. It's hard to do push-ups while laughing your lungs out. I was thinking about the concept of guest hosts about the time in the show Edmund and Tim Adamick brought it up as well. Tim A could be Tim C, Yarstow could be Summer, and Edmund could fill in Jeffrey's place. Of course, only temporarily, no one could really take the place of the Warlin after all. Sorry, Mike, it looks like you'll still be there. I'm not sure who you'd use to call on the voicemail line to fill in for Edmund and Yarstow, although Yarstow seemed to handle that pretty well when he was on. And then Matt finishes with, the interview with Gene Cavellos has inspired me to head out and pick up the books. I read an early book based on the show. I don't recall title or author. It did not like it at all. I'm afraid it soured me to anything else that was published, but the interview has opened up my interests. I'll be looking for those the next time I'm out shopping. As usual, thanks for some great episodes.
Very cool.
Yes, I think that's the general, as far as the novelizations go, that seems to be the general path most people take. They get one of the early books, and it's crap, and so they don't want to touch any until they kind of hear from word of mouth that, no, really, this is the one that you need to read. And then, you know, it's you're on from there. So, anyway.
That all we got?
But, no, we got one more here. Actually, two more.
Two more.
Yeah, one of them's short, one of them's a little long. So here we go. You ready? We'll do this one. Speaking of the books, this comes from Colin Burke. In response to our an earlier query here, he says, the keeper in the urn comes alive and takes over control of David Sheridan and causes him to betray his parents and hand them over to the Drak and Londo. This is all revealed in the Legions of Fire trilogy. That would be in the... Out of the Darkness, the last book.
I think that was in response to one of my queries, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened to it.
And I think, well, I obviously got it wrong, and confession time on my part, I don't think I've read that volume now that it comes, you know, now that I start thinking about it. I, you know, of the three trilogies that are directly canon, the Centauri trilogy one was my least favorite. Not to say that it was bad, just... It just didn't work as well for me.
See, I'd love. Yeah.
Was it the story or the way it was told?
I think a lot of it had to do with the characterizations.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that Peter David did a good job with Londo. I thought he did a great job with Timov, but I felt he was inconsistent with Veer.
Hmm.
And especially some of the more action oriented portions of the book. You know, Veer is a character. I mean, he has unexpected depths of strength, but those strengths, I don't think, fall into the range of Veer Kato action hero.
Okay.
Wow.
But that's just, you know, that's just me. So that's why that one didn't work as well.
I'd actually like to read that, because that was one of the stories that intrigued me that just never really seemed to get explained.
Well, good luck finding out of the darkness. That seems to be the one book that everybody wants that nobody can find.
Yeah, we have 3 requests for it and only 1 copy of the book. It's like, oops.
Ouch. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how we'll handle that one. So, however, yes, everybody else, check out the Technomage trilogy. Definitely check out the Psycor trilogy. Mm-hmm. You will not be disappointed. I can promise you that.
I would like to find out why the second book of the Technomage trilogy is gone and the third book of the Centauri trilogy is gone. Like, unattainable. That just doesn't make any sense. How does the second book go out?
The shadows. It's the work of the shadows, I guess. Fairest thing I could figure. All right, last email. Here we go. This comes from Galen McIntyre. Galen says, I know I am way behind in the podcast. Just finished listening to episode number 30, having actually to watch all 5 seasons in order. I think one thing that can answer a lot of B5 questions is by answering one question, where did Vorlons come from? I think that Vorlons are just the evolution of humans that have learned to travel time, created the great machine, and had a hand in the evolution of humans. And just as humans have had good and bad sides, the shadows could be those humans who have always fought the system and caused great harm. We do get a glimpse of what humans evolve into, and it looks strangely like a Vorlon outside of an encounter suit. And we never do see a dead shadow body. This also would solve a lot of issues on why Vorlons did or didn't help humans the way they did and what happened with B4. Just a thought. Anyway, love the podcast. Just wish I had more time to catch up. Hmm. That's from Galen in Tucson. So, Galen, you can hop on down to Draco Vista Studios and
wear your purple or green.
That's right. But you might want to peek in the window first, see what everybody else is wearing. In response to his question, and Galen, I don't know how much viewing of Babylon 5 you've done so far. Really, it's established directly that the Vorlons and the Shadows are first ones and are descendants from ultimately Lorien. And so are not time-traveling humans coming back in time to bootstrap themselves forward
right. That
way. So there's that question. But yes, at the end of the deconstruction of Falling Stars, that human ranger does transmute himself into something that's very Vorlonish and gets into an encounter suit and leaves the Earth as the sun goes nova. And you know what? Something that occurs to me, and this is one of those things, I can't remember where I read it. I don't know if it's on the Lurker's Guide somewhere. You might want to scan that if you have the opportunity. But it seemed to me that one of the things that's not really dealt with in the episode, but one of the things that was in the background as Straczynski wrote that story is that it is, as that ranger is leaving the evacuated Earth, this is basically yet another cycle in the continuing struggle between the forces of light and dark.
Right.
And that the sun had been induced to go nova by those forces of darkness.
Hmm.
Right. Again, it's like one of those things that I saw somewhere. I can't remember if it's on the Lurker's Guide or something, you know, I made up in a fever dream or something. But
until I get confirmation otherwise, I'm going to vote with fever dream, because I always thought it was just a natural course of progression because humans had finally stepped out into the stars and were comfortable there. So, you know, their home world was gone and they'd be sad about it. But
didn't they actually give a time frame of like 100,000 years or something like that?
It was like a million years.
Which by that time, you know, Sol would be probably right around the nova stage.
I'm voting on eating the worm. I think that's
that's probably what did it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Tim ate the worm for Cinco de Mayo and caused that hallucination.
Hallucination.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Fair enough. Wow. But I freely admit to it. You know.
All righty then.
Yeah, what can I say? Well, that's it for listener feedback at this point in time. You know, we get correspondence in, and if it's not read during the show, it's not that we don't appreciate getting it. It's usually, you know, things that are of specific interest to the person who's emailing and not necessarily that to a general audience or, you know, so. And we try to respond to everything that we get, so feel free to email, and if you don't hear from myself or Summer, you know,
blame the worm.
Give up, you might hear eventually. Yeah, exactly.
Blame the worm. Always yeah, blame the worm.
Blame the worm. The shadow made me do it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that will do it for today's show. If you want to send in an email, email in your own recording of your own voicemail, or just send jokes to Tim. That email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to just call the voice line, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the Great War came upon us all.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.